This is episode number 162 of the High Impact Leaders Podcast, your shortcut to personal growth and career success. Hey, welcome to High Impact Leaders. I'm your host, Doug Stannert of the Leaders Institute, and our goal is to help you build strong teams while growing a successful business. On this week's episode, I interview Amy Mabry, who is a senior instructor for the Leaders Institute, and she's been doing a lot of custom workshops about how to empower your team and keep from falling into that trap where we try to micromanage our employees or our team members. So if you manage people, or if you want to someday manage a team of people, she has really, really simple steps, four really simple steps that will help you help your team grow. And the steps will also help you keep morale higher and implement new ideas in the marketplace more efficiently. By the way, Amy began her career in retail. So her first job out of school was as a manager in a department store. And then she progressed up into senior management for that company, first as a regional manager, and then by owning and managing her own stores. Now she travels around the country teaching leaders how to manage their teams more efficiently and effectively. And she wrote a paper about empowerment that I'm going to link to in the show notes. By the way, the episode is brought to you by leadersinstitute.com. So for leadership or team building ideas, please visit our website at www.leadersinstitute.com. And if you like the content on the podcast, make sure and leave me a review on your podcast app and make sure to subscribe to the podcast so your phone automatically downloads every episode. So enjoy the interview with Amy. Hey, so Amy, welcome to High Impact Leaders.
Hey, thanks, Doug. Glad to be here.
Yeah, hey, so the topic today that Amy wanted to have Amy on to talk about is empowering your team members without micromanaging, especially in situations like there's a potential for, you know, a recession to hit and that kind of thing. And when that happens, there can be tension within teams and that kind of thing. And so the more empowered that your team members are, the more efficient our team is going to run. So I know you've kind of written a couple of papers on empowerment and really how to get your team members to be a part of the team more effectively and that kind of thing. So just kind of tell us a little bit about kind of your philosophy on empowerment and micromanaging or not micromanaging and that kind of thing.
Sure. Yeah. And so really what it boils down to is, you know, how do you unlock the full potential of your team and improve overall job satisfaction? And having had a recent conversation with a client, you know, who was really wanting help with employee turnover was kind of, what piqued my interest and got me going down this road. Trying to help all the clients.
So, what in your experience, kind of what kind of things are kind of causing turnover and what the employees to kind of leave and that kind of thing?
You know, what it boils down to is that big ugly word that a lot of us don't like to hear, and it's called micromanagement. How do we stop doing that?
Being a prolific micromanager myself, you know, I mean, it's kind of hard when you're like the best in the world at doing stuff. And then you hire people that aren't nearly as good at doing that as what you are. How do you keep from micromanaging, right? I've always been told that if you're the smartest person in the room, you're not hiring the right people, right?
Right. Because at the end of the day, Doug, you know, if you're giving out a task and then you're taking it back and doing it all over again, then, you know, the problem starts from the get-go with laying down those expectations from the beginning.
It's kind of funny. I mean, we're paying people as employers, we're paying people to do things. And then if we go back and do them ourselves, then, you know, what's the use, right? So, Amy, I know you broke down the step-by-step process of how to empower your team, and you basically made it into like four really, really simple steps. So what's step number one?
The answer is you want to be a coach who gives positive feedback versus a micromanager who gives constructive criticism.
Sure.
Okay. You know, today's micromanagers, if you will, they tend to give assignments without any feedback until it's too late. Then they tend to be overly critical when the result is less than they expected. They also tend to focus on day-to-day tasks instead of the bigger picture. and employees end up, you know, not with the vision for the future, that if that makes sense.
Yeah. Can you give me kind of an example of what this would look like in real life?
Kind of reminds me, a long time ago, I hated this job, by the way. I'm just going to put that out there. And my boss is long gone and he's never going to hear me say that. But I had the very, very boring task of keeping inventory for a movie theater. I was one of the assistant GMs. There were four of us. And throughout the year, we rotated through four different managerial roles. So for a quarter, I was in charge of HR. The next quarter, I was in charge of finance. Then I was in charge of production, which was like the movie, the kind of cool stuff you get up in the and do the movie. But then I also had to do facilities. And facilities came, you know, in by way of inventory management, all that kind of stuff, which I found boring. So the problem was that...
What kind of inventory is there at a movie theater?
All of the concessions.
Oh, concessions. Oh, well, that makes sense. Okay, sure.
This was a 16-screen movie theater, so it was like a ton of food, right?
Sure.
So, but the point of the process was there was a GM, and then there were four assistants. And so at any given time, after a year of being there, we would all know how to run all four areas of the theater in case he had to be out.
Sure.
The problem was we would spend all this time and, you know, you would think, oh, it's just counting stuff. Well, it was a 16-screen movie theater. It was a lot of stuff. So sometimes it's a lot of, you know, all-nighters, especially in the summertime when movies didn't get out at 2 o'clock in the morning. And you spend all this time making sure the reports are right and perfect, only for him to come along behind us and redo everything. It drove us nuts because it's like, well, why are we even doing this? Do you trust us? So we just felt demotivated and totally like, what's the point? Why are we here even doing this if he's just going to come along behind us and do it again or change it anyways?
And it seems to me like in that kind of situation, the person, the people, yourself included, never got a chance to really learn the right way to do that or the way that was... the way that apparently that he wanted, because instead of using that as a coaching mechanism and helping you kind of learn how to do it, he just kind of went behind your back and kind of fixed it or criticized it or whatever. Right. Is that
correct? Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hey, so what's the, I guess one of the areas that could be a little bit more challenging on this is what happens when you're coaching somebody, you're showing somebody how to, kind of do something, you know, it's kind of a time-tested type thing. And while you're coaching, the person is maybe lazy or unmotivated or something like that. And as a result, you know, now the person who is the manager is now starting to get frustrated because they're not getting that what they expect the work ethic should be and that kind of thing. So how does that correspond with this? Because in that situation, you're not really micromanaging. You're trying to kind of improve performance. So how does that correspond? Where is the line that we cross to where we're trying to help and coach people, and where that falls in the area of kind of micromanaging and that kind of thing? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I do. And so with that, I mean, if you've got someone that you're If they're not excited, if they're demotivated, they're not seeing the overall picture. They're not seeing the outcome. They're just seeing a task list. And that's boring. We don't care. You know, but if we can see what you see, the overall vision, and we can see how our work and what you're asking us to do is going to contribute to the overall success of said vision and goal, then we're excited.
Yeah. And then the other thing in light with that is that I at least I know after kind of being away from the front line for a little while, you know, I'm not the person out in, you know, facing with the customer and everything. If I'm trying to coach people, some of the stuff that I'm trying to coach them to do may be totally outdated by now. I may not be getting the correct information if I'm telling people what to do or if I'm criticizing versus if I'm getting information from them and getting ideas from the folks who are actually on the front line. Is that kind of the case here too?
Yeah, it can be. But two, I mean, kind of going back to what I was saying about, you know, giving them the outcome, the overall view, you're setting those expectations without them having to say that, right? And which puts the ball over in their court. Okay, so for step one, be a coach who gives positive feedback versus a micromanager who gives constructive criticism. And just as a recap, number two step is, you know, to empower your team members, give them the outcome you expect and not just a task list.
Okay, perfect. All right, so what's step three? So what's the third thing now?
The third step is, if you want to empower without micromanaging, you must be flexible. It's one of the key components to projecting employee empowerment. And this lets you show that your management style allows new approaches, and it proves that you're willing to go the extra mile to reach your end goal.
Can you give me an example of what, like what kind of situations do managers kind of find themselves in where they have to be kind of flexible? Or
so, yeah, you know, I'll tell you an example of being flexible. I used to work for a company that resisted with everything they had against going paperless. I don't know if you remember that era. I'd be dating myself here. I don't care.
Yeah, I know. I was there. Everybody's like, what? What's paper, yeah. Right? The people that are listening are like, what's paper, right?
What's that? Yeah. What's a tape deck? No, but no. but they just resisted it. The C-suite, they were very set in their ways. They didn't trust digital storage. And, you know, we were always getting complaints from our direct reports, me specifically, like, Amy, why? Why do we have to use all this paper? It's such a waste. We can do it this way, this way. And so they didn't want to do it. They thought, well, the other thing was, we have all these paper, we have the record closet, we're constantly having to shuffle back and forth between offices, things are getting lost. And so, but, you know, they just didn't trust it. And so one of our team members, one of our admins decided to use a little showmanship, you know, to explain. Right. And she basically presented the executive team with the numbers that showed them exactly how much money we were spending as an international organization on ink and paper.
Oh, wow.
And that's really where you want to go. The bottom line, here you go. Here's the number. And oh, man, everybody was so excited. It was like a party in the office when they decided to go paperless. But, you know, it wasn't just a paperless thing, right? Like, we all felt compelled after that to start bringing more things to the table.
Right.
So, and sometimes it was a yes, sometimes it was a big fat no, but we all felt very valued and heard as part of the organization. And that in and of itself, something, albeit seemingly small, it really opened up the lines of communication in the office.
Yeah, I'll give you one that you might relate to. I remember we had a couple of millennials that we hired, a few years back, and they were really, of course, like the millennial team members, you know, they're really into texting, right? They don't like to talk to people on the phone, right? So they wanted to kind of text. So they wanted us to add Slack to our communication device here at the office. And man, all of us, I think you were probably one too, we were all kind of resistant to it. It's like, you can email people and you want to call them on the phone, right? I think one of the best things that we've ever done is put that tool in, because now instead of answering the same question over and over and over, basically we can answer it one time and people can go into Slack, do a search for that specific thing, and they've got an answer right away. So basically for the first maybe 2 months or so, we were kind of, at least I was anyway, kind of resistant to it. And then once I kind of saw the benefit of it, we kind of embraced it. It became one of our best kind of tools. And I think that's one of the things, is that a lot of times when people are kind of faced with change, the automatic human nature is to resist it. It's different. I'm not used to this. This is not comfortable for me. And so if it's maybe it's not even just being flexible, although that's the key component there. It's in addition to that, we also have to kind of realize that when people are not being flexible, it's because of fear. It's where, you know, they're comfortable doing something a certain way. And so we have to show them the benefits of being flexible and that kind of thing. So, and that, I mean, that comes from teamwork, right?
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. All right. So that's three of the four. What's the last one? What's the last thing that we need to do to empower your team?
This one's big. Proper role placement. Role placement for your team members is important. It's very important to empower without micromanaging. Proper role placement is so critical to ensuring the success of the overall team's goal and vision. Because it boils right down to is, what are people good at? You know, we're not all great at everything. We're not all experts in everything, but we're all very unique. And we have things that we're good at. And I think we've come across as it's this a time or two, Doug, even at the Leaders Institute.
Right. And I think this kind of goes back to that comment I made earlier about the difference between micromanaging and kind of coaching. If somebody really isn't interested or good at doing something, it's most likely because we put them in the wrong role. You know, they're
right.
I mean, they've got value, but maybe that's not the thing that what we're trying to force them to do is something that they're not really good at. It's not where their strength is. And so as a result, it's not letting them shine. It's not giving them the opportunity to excel.
And then we'll get frustrated and they will burn out.
Yep. Yep. So if that's the case though, you know, I know that I'm pretty good at creating processes, you know, that's just the way my mind works. I see a problem. I'm like, okay, let's figure out a way to fix that problem and then put a process in place and a strategy, a structure in place. That's something that I've gotten. At least I like to think I'm good at doing that kind of stuff, right? I've never really considered myself a manager, though. I mean, I can set the structure up, but I don't think I'm the right person to try to manage somebody into following that structure or even getting them to adapt to that structure. But as the owner of a company, I have to do that. I mean, I have to kind of manage. So even though I wouldn't think that I'm in the wrong role for my company. It's part of what I have to kind of do. So when we're talking about the roles, does that mean that, if somebody is really good at 90% of what they do, but 10% is kind of a struggle, that we have to move them somewhere else? Or is that a place where we kind of do some coaching and maybe partner them up with somebody that maybe has that as a strength so that it doesn't hurt the team?
I would go with the latter part of that.
Yeah.
Because why hurt the 90%? You know, for just the 10%, where there's somebody else out there, there's somebody on the team that can come and pick up the slack that wants to because they like it.
Right. Yep. Yep.
So,
yeah, no, we have that here. You know, we've got folks that are really, really good coaches. They've got a ton of fantastic content in their head, study life experience and phenomenal knowledge about training and coaching and that kind of thing. But sometimes they just don't think they're, you know, really good at writing, right? So, you know, in that situation, maybe they kind of take their content to one of our writers and say, hey, here's my ideas. Do something with this. And then the two of them together, now all of a sudden they hit it out of the ballpark because now we're taking the two strengths of each one of those people and now we're able to use that 90% in a more effective way, right?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I'll give you another, you know, analogy with that, or an example is, you know, sometimes you can have like the Leaders Institute, right? We're comprised of all different kinds of experts.
Sure.
Some of us are really, really good at getting on stage and, you know, being that powerhouse for 1,000 folks or 500 people and get them all amped up. And you've got some of us are really good in those small classroom settings with the one-on-one.
Do you want
to put that person that's really good and, you know, better with the one-on-one in front of 1,000 people to amp them up? Probably not. Right. And so just, you know, just like weighing those, you know, and putting people where they really need to be, I think is key. And two, you know, to expand upon that, when you're bringing people on into these roles, asking those questions are crucial from the get-go to see if they're even a good fit where you need them to be. If you're really looking, because if you're looking for somebody that can do it all, well, then you have to know that from the beginning. Wouldn't you agree?
Right. Sure. Makes sense. Yeah. All right. So in summary, we got the four steps are, if I remember them correctly, it's be a coach. Don't be the criticizer. Number two is to give them the expectation that you want, not a task list. Tell them what result you're looking for, and let their own ingenuity and experience kind of lead them. And then be flexible. And then finally, make sure that your team are in the proper role for their strengths and everything. Right. So those are the four major things.
Yep. Absolutely. Perfect.
All right. Cool. I love that. Really cool insights and everything. So Amy, thanks a lot for being a part of High Impact Leaders. And if you want more details about any of this, I'll put a link to Amy's paper in the show notes. So Amy, thanks a lot for being a part of High Impact Leaders.
For having me, Doug. Appreciate it.